Hello, everyone. I'm Al Deldegan, creator and producer of the Leaders, Innovators, and Big Ideas podcast, supported by Rainforest Alberta. This podcast showcases the people who are working to improve Alberta's innovation ecosystem. Join me for my conversation with Richard Campbell as we discuss his clever travel platform and his genius method of how to win at hiring people. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Richard Campbell, and Richard has both a company called 10 Adventures, which is a travel tech platform, and he has a podcast based on the same name. So, Richard, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Al. It's great to be on this podcast. It's such a great resource for all of us entrepreneurs and startup people here in the Calgary ecosystem.
I appreciate you saying that. That's awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Richard Campbell? Where did you come from and how did you get to where you are at this point?
Grew up in Calgary in the 80s and 90s, went to school here, left to work in the UK and Quebec and Argentina, came back, worked here, left for my master's, came back and have been here since 2011. So kind of my whole career has been in startups and scale-ups. I really love the energy of creating things. And yeah, about 5 years ago, decided to start my own company. And kind of through happy accidents, I founded 10 Adventures, which is a platform to book custom and private vacations with a focus on active and adventure travel. So, and I think Calgary's just this such a unique place where we have this huge entrepreneurial spirit and all this great outdoors. It's really kind of like an entrepreneur's, you know, dream location.
That's awesome. What was the catalyst to start this company?
Oh, that's it's a real kind of deep question. I was a COO of a consulting company. We'd grown from 18 to 425 people. And I went back to school for a leadership course, which was all about kind of like, how do we want like to live our lives? And like, what's going to make us happen? Kind of this idea of authenticity. And I was reading a book by one of my professors at the same time called How Will You Measure Your Life? And I was just turning 40. And I said, oh, like, this is great, but I don't know if it's great, the right, you know, future for me. You know, everything's going well and there's like nothing to complain about. But if I'm 65 and I don't try doing something myself, you know, having been like a doer and then a team lead and a project lead and then, you know, an organizational leader, but it was never kind of my baby that was my idea. So I said, oh, I want to get back into tech and I want to kind of test myself. And I started this website called 10 Hikes, which was just my favorite 10 hikes in all the national parks and provincial parks from Jasper down to Montana. Just started that for fun to show I could still do it. And that kind of organically grew to having hikes in like 80 or 90 different like national parks or cool towns or across the world. And then people kept saying, oh, Richard, can you be our guide when we go to Tuscany? Can you be our guide in the Alps? And I'm not a guide. I'm not a mountain. You know, I love the outdoors, but I'm just a regular dude. And I thought, well, these people keep asking me to be their guide. There must be a business here. So in 2019, built 10 Adventures, which connects highly vetted local guides who specialize in adventure travel and custom and private itineraries with travelers from over 35 countries. And so since then, it's been a wild ride through COVID and the recovery and, you know, all the things that are impacting travels. You know, basically my 5 years have been like the Calgary economy, a roller coaster.
Well, that's really, really cool. I like how the story goes. A lot of times when people start businesses, they come up with an idea and then they go out and try and implement the idea and then try and sell it. And in the worst case scenario, they go out and spend a lot of money and time and effort building something and then they try and sell it. Where in your case, you were just doing something because you really loved to do it. And then all of a sudden, the customers were literally knocking on your door. That's a great reason and pathway to start a business. I think that's quite brilliant.
You know, I never even, just when you said that, I've never really thought of it. But yeah, like we launched in our first week, we had a sale. And so if you think giving a company you don't know or, you know, some startup $2,000 or $3,000 for a trip, you know, it just kind of happened. Sales weren't a problem. And it is. It's because we already had people that wanted this and we knew that there was a demand and we didn't have that hassle or the worry of, is anyone going to buy this? How do we get people to buy this? And we've been able to grow almost exclusively organically, just with people who use the site or tell their friends or find us organically. And it's kind of been a huge headache for most founders, has kind of just worked for us. And I never thought, oh yeah, it was just because I listened to them day one and just they said, can you do this? I said, okay, well, let's go do it.
That's awesome. Well, I think you're probably finding a path along two really cool things. One is that you started the business because you had customers, which is what all the great business leaders say. And then the second thing is Joseph Campbell says, when you're on the right path, you'll find, I can't remember the exact quote, but basically when you're on the right path, everything falls into place and it's easy to do. Whereas if you're on the wrong path, you're constantly hitting brick walls and trying and getting stuck and things just aren't working out the way they're supposed to be. So it sounds like you're right in the middle of both of those. Everything just happened really, really well for you and you had customers to kick it off. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's the pandemic wasn't ideal for a travel-focused startup. But, you know, one thing that's interesting is, you know, spending my career or growing up in Calgary and then, you know, working in tech in the dot-com boom, then coming back to Calgary and dealing with the global financial crisis. And, you know, I've lived through so many downturns that when COVID happened, it sucked. But most people have never dealt with anything like that. Whereas in Calgary, geez, every 10 years it's happened since I've lived here. And it's almost like a superpower being able to say, okay, this is really bad. It, you know, it really sucks for our businesses. But we know it's going to end. And how do we prepare for when it ends? And I saw a lot of our competitors just kind of do these really wacky things that would have no value. But, you know, just being from Calgary, you know, get ready for when this ends, because that's when you're going to be able to grow. And so, you know, we took this bad time and we turned it into how do we scale and get our product. So when travel comes back, we've got a fully fledged product. And I think, you know, in the end, it probably helped us because it slowed down our competitors and allowed us to accelerate.
Yeah, that's really clever. And it's great that you were thinking about that, you know, instead of just panicking and waiting for the good times to come back, you kind of had a plan and you thought about it and worked on it, which is kudos to you. And that's why you're around today. And tell me a little bit, a bit more about the platform itself. Like, how does it function and what sort of are you appealing to, a double-sided marketplace or anything like that?
Yeah. So yeah, it's a double-sided marketplace. On one side, we've got these incredible local adventure and active travel tour operators. And so a key of that is they're incredible. So they have history of delighting English-speaking travelers. And, you know, when we look at them, these are people that love where they live. They want to show off what makes it special. They want to allow people to connect more authentically in these destinations and do it typically under human power. So lots of cycling, hiking, you know, e-biking, even canoeing, kayaking, sailing, skiing, you know, all these different human-powered activities. And, you know, they want to show off a part of the countries that are often not as touristy. And so for them, they want access to a big audience of English-speaking travelers. And part of our success is we have this big audience. We have a community of 65,000 registered users, over 2 million annual visitors that use all these free route guides we've created over the last 6 or 7 years. And so suppliers want to come on there because they get access to these people who, you know, really understand adventure products. They're actually really great travelers. You know, they really, you know, they don't cause trouble because they already kind of understand the ethos. On the traveler side, most of them have either planned trips themselves or they've booked onto group trips. And we serve predominantly 45 to 75 year olds. That's, you know, 2/3 of our customer base. And so they don't want to do another bus tour. They don't want to do a cruise. They don't want to go wait in line, you know, to go into a cathedral or go into a museum. They want something different, and wellness is really important to them. But they're also really conscious that, hey, these things are a little bit different. You know, how can we make sure that we're going to have a great trip? And so what we do is we bring sample itineraries of the tour operators' most popular trips, have them on the website. A lot of people just love the sample itinerary. They say, this looks great. You know, it's 8 days. I get to see what I want to see. They book it as is. Or they can request changes, or they can even go through and create an itinerary from scratch. And so it's a way for operators to display their best trips, and it's a way for travelers to find the trips they want, searching through, you know, by country, by activity, by region, by, you know, tour name, by difficulty, a lot of different aspects. And the key is you can personalize it. So you can choose the day you start, you can choose the accommodation type, you can choose if it's guided or unguided. You can choose who goes with you. So you do it with your, you know, your partner or your family or your friends. and, you know, kind of travel so special to all of us. It's like, the for me at least, the best part of my year is when I get to go on vacation. And so to be able to have a vacation with the people you love, it creates these hugely impactful moments. And this is, if you look on people's walls, it's often photos of their trips they've done with the people they love most. And so we help people, you know, kind of make travel even more powerful by allowing them to get exactly what they want with the people they want.
That's wonderful. And I think that the concept of a tour guide is sometimes lost on people. And it's so funny. The timing of this episode is really great because I just finished having a conversation with my wife this morning when we were having our morning coffee. And she was saying that she read this thing where there was foreign tourists somewhere in the Alberta backcountry. And there was two different situations that she highlighted. One of them was where the lady or the mother lined up all her kids and then sprayed them with bear spray, thinking that it was like mosquito repellent, right? And then the other one was a lady trying to put her child on a bear cub shoulders so that it could get a really great picture. And it's like, common sense tells you that's not a good idea, but when you go to another country, you don't know any of this stuff and you just kind of make it up as you go along. Whereas if you had a tour guide and you're like, oh, how do I use this bear spray? Do I spray it on my kids? And the tour guide would go, no, don't do that. So, and I'm relatively adventurous, but not to the point where I want to just go out and figure things out on my own. Like if I go to a country, like the example I used was Egypt. If I went to Egypt, I wouldn't want to go there by myself and just figure things out, because there's a lot of crazy situations you could get into, which are not necessarily good for your health. Whereas a tour guide will say, okay, this is how you deal with these people, and this is what we're going to do here, and here's how we're going to do this other thing. So I think this is really, really great. And when you're talking about outdoor adventures anywhere in the world, that's a really, really good place to have a tour guide for.
Yeah, yeah. It's just having that safety aspect, but it's even more than the safety aspect, because in a lot of places you don't know, like, where's, you know, if you're going to go cycling in Tuscany, what are the really spectacular villages to stay in versus the mediocre ones? Where's the really good restaurant as opposed to maybe the touristy one? Let's get you into this beautiful family run inn versus staying in maybe just a chain. And I think there's lots of these little things that you just don't know you don't know. And the example I always give is, my wife and I love going to Paris. I've gone there for, geez, 25 years. And probably it was like my fifth or sixth time where I start to realize, oh, I've been doing Paris all wrong. Like, I start to like really experience the food and feel more comfortable doing that and going to like the less visited museums or places. And it's like, if I'd only gone to Paris once, my experience would have been totally different than, oh, I actually understand Paris. I can now kind of make informed choices. And so for people who maybe are only going to go to Morocco once or only go to Chile once or have been to France and want to do something different, this is where getting this personalized tour allows you to almost get an insider's view. And because we work with tour operators that live in the places where they offer tours, they are so, so, so knowledgeable. So you can have these incredible experiences of, you know, tasting food that you would never, you know, never think to eat if, you know, wouldn't even know existed, and you probably wouldn't try because you'd be too worried if you were on your own or seeing, you know, really special viewpoints. Here in the Rockies, we see all the time, like, a lot of great places are really busy, but you can go 10 minutes away and have as good of experience and have nobody there. And so it's like, it's one of those things that there's a lot of benefits to having, you know, a tour plan for you if you want to maximize your time and have the best experience possible.
Ah, that's awesome. I mean, so what's the, we'll put it in the show notes, obviously, but what's the website? Is it 10adventures.com?
Yeah. So it's 10adventures.com. The idea being there's kind of 10 different adventure categories we focus on. The other idea is, long ago, I had a classmate who said, always have like your next 10 trips planned. And as soon as you come back from one trip, plan your next one. So it's kind of like this idea of, again, if you like travel, and you know, not everyone does. I know a lot of people that don't go traveling at all. But if you do, there's something that's really, really rewarding of, you know, getting that trip booked, knowing you're going to go do something great. And most of us have these bucket lists of, oh, here's all the things I want to do. And so it's trying to just help people, you know, focus on that and then, you know, help them have these incredible experiences.
Unbelievable. Does the platform allow people to build that bucket list, Or is it just to book the trip they're about to go on?
Yeah, so we haven't built that. That's actually, it's funny you mentioned, there's something we want to do where people can start to say, hey, let's start tracking these trips. Or even like we get a lot of groups of friends right now. So, you know, one couple says, oh, we're going to go cycle. We want to go cycling in Europe. And then they have other friends that come in and there's a group of four or five couples. And what they tell us the trouble is which specific itinerary to choose, what specific dates. And they're like, oh, if you could build something where, you know, you could have couples or a group start to comment. And it's, you know, it's like when you try and find a meeting with like four or five different people, it's like that problem, but for travel that they're not sure exactly what trip. And then it's like, well, I can start July 4th to July 6th. And somebody else, oh, I'm July, you know, 5th to 9th, and just trying to nail down the dates. But I do like the idea also of just, hey, just start telling us which trips you want to do. And then when they go on sale or something happens, you can get alerted. That's a good addition.
Yeah, that would be a really great feature, especially for the adventurous people who do a lot of these types of trips. Having that platform where they can manage their bucket list would be really useful. So good on you. That's something you're going to have to now get on there, because you've said it publicly that it's a good idea.
You know, like every startup, we're never starved of ideas. Like if you talk to any founder, they have like 100 things they want to do. The challenge we always have is, okay, we got our revenues that we've got to match to what we spend. And that's really the challenge of managing, you know, what's the most important that we can work on at any one time. And yeah, it's kind of probably the fun part for a lot of us as well, because it's like the strategy and the prioritization and taking, you know, educated guesses. Okay, I think this will deliver the most impact. Sometimes we're right. Oftentimes, unfortunately, we're wrong about these new features, but it is fun when you have an idea and then it works.
Yeah, for sure. And then you have a platform already with people on it, so that you could ask those 65,000 users to prioritize the next three or four different development projects. So,
oh, I haven't thought of that. We were just doing a survey of our past guests and also our abandoned carts to try and understand, you know, we don't really know very much. We've never reached out to past guests to say, hey, what's going on? Or we never reached out to people that didn't book a trip. That, you know, they made an inquiry, but then, you know, they never completed it. And so we're just trying to learn more and like, hey, how can we serve you better? And part of it's like, what trips do you want to do? What places are you interested in? What part of the year do you want to travel in? But I like the idea of like just asking for features. You know, it's a really good idea to add to the survey as well.
Yeah. The top feature is the one you want to work on first.
Exactly.
That's,
yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's cool. Now, you had mentioned to me that you had done a master's. So what was the master's on? And where did you do it?
Yeah, so there's, I was in the middle of my career. We were growing this consulting company and I realized there's a lot of problems I don't have the solution for. And you kind of, you know, a lot of times, you know, undergrad in commerce, but a lot of you like, where do I even look to solve these problems? And so I looked at MBA programs and they were kind of for an earlier stage career type person. I looked at EMBA programs, but feedback from people I know that had done them said, oh, that's really disruptive for your job. You're kind of, you know, you kind of either don't focus on the education because your job's too much, or you end up kind of not working on your job. And so there's this one program called the Sloan Fellowship. So it's offered at Stanford, MIT, and London Business School. And so it was designed 50 years ago for mid-career executives to take them, give them the tools to kind of take the next step in leadership. So it's a master's in strategy and leadership, which is the weirdest, you know, title. But I went to London for a year and took that there and kind of culminated in my thesis, which was, how do you grow a professional service firm, which is essentially a firm with a lot of knowledge workers. And so I worked with a senior partner from McKinsey who had become a professor. So kind of had just like world-class intellect of consulting that, you know, used to bill out at £1,000 an hour, as well as a bunch of other professors there to look at, you know, how do you actually do this? And what's really interesting is it's all the people, you know, everything comes down to the people, which had kind of been what I'd been learning, you know, growing this consulting firm, is having great people that, you know, love what they're doing, that are committed to getting stuff done, that you like working with, you know, that's the hardest part. And it's easy to find a great resume, but then, you know, they don't fit in with the culture, or maybe their skills aren't the same as what's on their resume. And so really it's like, how do you hire, train, and then retain, you know, your top talent? That's a massive part of growing any sort of knowledge-based organization.
Right on. So based on that, so you've obviously researched that. Have you come to any conclusions? Do you have a solution?
Yeah, so we're lucky. One of the professors I had, Dan Cable, has kind of spent his career looking at the importance. So he's an organizational behavior professor, but looking at like the impact of people on their organizations. And he pointed me to a lot of studies about how the best organizations in the world hire. And the one that hit me the most was GE in their turbine division. The way they hired was they brought people in and they got them to rebuild a lawnmower engine, which, you know, I'm not mechanically inclined, but a lawnmower engine is obviously much simpler than a jet turbine. And the idea was, if you can't rebuild a lawnmower turbine, there's no way you can build these complex things. And then he looked at what Facebook was doing and Goldman Sachs and McKinsey and a wide variety of like these global firms that are, you know, really highly successful. And it comes down to this idea of job simulations. And so, you know, one thing I'd learned is education, where you worked before, titles, they weren't highly correlated with success in hiring. You know, when we were hiring people, it's like, oh, we made a lot of bad hires, but on paper, they were perfect. And kind of the idea of all these great companies is actually get the person to do the job or to do part of the job, and that's going to give you the best predictor of success. And so the idea was, okay, introduce some sort of job simulation. So when I came back to my consulting company, I took a year off to do my master's. When I came back, I started to introduce this, and it was incredible. Like, you know, I remember one of the first tests we did, we were hiring a financial controller. And so we had CFOs, we had very senior people, and we developed a simple test. Like, can you reconcile these transactions? Can you spot, you know, obvious errors in these some financial statements? Can you look at past financial statements and identify what your concerns would be? So kind of like first year accounting type mm-hmm. task. Like, nothing was really hard. And our thought was, this seems really easy, but let's start with this. And what turned out is like a significant majority of people couldn't do this kind of basic level accounting. And you think, well, if you can't reconcile, you know, a bunch of transactions to identify, you know, what's missing, can you actually be the financial controller of an organization? Like, if you can't do the task, can you manage the task effectively? And so we actually hired somebody who was much younger, much earlier in their career, a person who was on partner track at a big four accounting firm. And it was an incredible hire. But what it taught us was, oh yeah, there is some aspect, just because you have a great title or a great background, it doesn't mean you can actually do this type of task. And what was interesting is we would not probably have interviewed that person if we'd just gone, you know, we typically would interview three or four people who had the perfect resume. And so that was really the genesis of rolling this out throughout the entire organization. What we found was this little niche of finding incredible people. So it was people that weren't in the oil and gas industry, who were really, really interested in moving into that niche, who had, you know, kind of an atypical background, often people who, you know, maybe hadn't gone to school here in Canada or didn't have experience with companies we'd recognized, but they had tremendous technical abilities to actually do the work. And so we discovered like this little pot of gold that none of our competitors were looking for. And so what happened is we identified, can this person do the job? And we're doing all this blind. Like, you know, you don't look at the resume. You give this test to almost everyone who applies. In our case, you just had to be a resident in Canada, have a work permit. You test everybody. And then you interview the people who can do the job, which means you become way more diverse and remove almost all the bias out of the hiring process. And then the interview isn't, can you do the job? The interview is, do I want to spend 5 years working with you? Like, are we a good team? Do we kind of think the same way in terms of approaching, you know, maybe respect or working with colleagues or, you know, just kind of like the culture aspect. And so it was like almost overnight, bad hires disappeared. And it was kind of just this revolutionary aspect that contributed significantly to our ability to grow and then find talent. Like, it's easy to say, oh, we want the best software developer, let's go find someone from Google. But every company is trying to find someone from Google. You know, probably not every company. You know, we're not trying to find somebody from Google because we can't pay that much. But, you know, everyone's looking for the obvious candidates. But when you're growing a company, you can't look at the obvious candidates. You have to find people with talent and desire who want to join your team and contribute. And it means it's these people who have all the skills, but their resume doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love where you're going with that. And it's setting off so many reminders and pieces of information that in my career, when I started my first software company, we looked at hiring people. And we said, okay, well, how can you tell from a resume whether they're any good or not? And so we created like a really basic programming test. It was all on paper. You didn't have to do anything elaborate, but it was kind of like showing them some code and saying, where's the error in this, you know, and stuff like that. And it was super, super simple. Anybody who had done any decent amount of coding would pass it with flying colors. But what we found was that was really, really fascinating was we didn't mark those tests and we didn't hire people based on the highest score that they got on the test. What we looked at was, because it was a handwritten test, we looked at like how they answered the question. And that's actually where you see their problem solving skills and whether they, you know, have a clue what they're talking about. And so that I found that really, really interesting. And then when I started New Idea Machine, shameless plug, we are basically giving opportunities to new developers who maybe were an oil and gas engineer for 12 years and then they lost their job and they couldn't find another job. So they decided to pivot their career into tech and become a developer. And we're basically giving them hands-on experience building software so that they can be more marketable in the ecosystem. But even then, we still have a programming test at the beginning. So if they want to come in and join us and be part of our organization, they still have to prove that they can do the basic level, which is exactly what you just said. And unless you do that, you end up with people who have a great resume or talk a great talk, but then they can't actually perform. And ultimately, when you hire somebody, you want them to be able to do the job. You want them to be able to perform even the most basic stuff because they can always learn the new stuff or the harder stuff as they go along gaining experience. I'd love to hear your comments on that, Vivek, maybe a leaning a little bit towards more junior resources versus the senior expensive resources that you commented about earlier.
Yeah. So actually our lead developer is a chemical engineer who realized his passion was technology. And we have two interns. One is a physicist and one is a marketeer, and they're doing incredible. I think one thing that's really interesting about doing these simulations is it's good for us to say, hey, here's what the work is. You know, let's make sure the person can do it. It's good for the person as well that we really know what they can do. And so it's not these case of they, you know, the second day in, oh man, this is not going to work out. And I think, you know, if you're hiring somebody, it doesn't always work out. But it behooves the employer to try and do as much as we can to make sure this is going to be successful. And, you know, again, at this last company and even at 10 Ventures, it's very rare that with all this work we do in advance, we make a mistake. And I think that's really important. Like, you know, it sucks when you join a new company and then it doesn't work out. And especially if it's like a couple of days in, it's like, how did this happen? Those things almost never happen when you actually assess this before. And for an employee, I remember, this is going back, geez, almost 15 years, but we talked about what the role was. And so it's the person right out of school. And we talked about joining this entrepreneurial company. It was growing fast and they had nailed the test. It was like they got everything perfect. And then we started talking in the interview about like why people like working here and why people quit. Because, you know, in all startups, you have people that just doesn't fit. And as we talked more and more, like we shared the dirty laundry, which in startups, the dirty laundry is what we all love. But for some people, they really hate it. Now, that individual actually didn't take our offer. He ended up joining Shell to sell refined products, which I think he basically just sold jet fuel or something, you know, something like that. But you couldn't imagine a more different job from a fast-growing entrepreneurial company versus joining, you know, marketing and Shell for gas. But that's an example of, you know, I think it's important. Like, you want to work for a company that's taking the time to make sure that you're going to fit in. Because it sucks to lose your job. It sucks to be in an organization where you don't feel good as part of the team. You're not being used correctly. You're not playing to your strengths. So I think it's really, you know, I always look at it, it's like it's a real help we're doing to people we hire that we're doing as much as we can to make sure they're going to have a great experience and be able to grow. And like our team, all of our leads joined as junior people and just demonstrated this incredible ability. And then, you know, they've been with us like as a startup. All of our key people have been with us for 4 or 5 years, and we only formed in 2019. So it's like we've been able to keep these incredible people, have them take on more responsibility, step way out of what their background is, because we spend a lot of time at the start making sure, hey, do I want to spend 40 hours a week with this person? And do I think they can do something great? Which I think is important. If you're an employee, you want someone that takes some time to really think about your career as well, not just what you can do for them, but how you can help their career.
That's such a valid point. And a lot of people talk about that culture side of things, and that's so important. being able to do the job and then being able to work with somebody for the next 4 years or whatever is sort of like the key to getting the job. But what a lot of people do is they're so, I don't know if I want to use the word desperate, but they're desperate for a job that they're willing to take anything. If the money's good and it looks like a decent company, they're ready to go. But then what happens is they're sitting in that position and they're just like, you know, this isn't me. This isn't who I want to be. And I'm not enjoying it. And then they have to start all over again and go out and find another job. And then the company that just invested all that time and energy into them has got to start all over again as well. So I think you hit it so on the point that when someone's trying to find a job and a company's trying to hire somebody, they both have to find the fit. It has to be perfect fit for both of them. And don't just take the job because you need a job. I mean, sometimes people have to do that, but you're not doing yourself or the company any kind of service that in that situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with how you phrase that more.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Richard. Thank you very much for being here. Before we sign out, is there anything you'd like to, any additional pearls of wisdom that you'd like to leave the audience with?
Yeah, so I have a podcast. We talk to people who are doing these big trips. We talk to authors. We talk to researchers about the benefits of the outdoors. And if you're feeling stressed, if you're feeling you've lost creativity or connection with loved ones, spend some time outdoors. You know, go for a hike around town. You know, we live in this great place that has Fish Creek and Nose Hill, even along the rivers. But just make some time to get outdoors. It's going to make you feel better, make you feel happier. All my great ideas happen usually on, you know, 2 or 3 day backpacking trips. Just when you can get rid of kind of the constant distractions, you'll be amazed at how much nicer life is. And after the worst week, you know, as a founder, when weeks are really bad, you know, spending an afternoon with the family walking in Fish Creek, I always just feel great after that. And it's, you know, the science proves it, you know, being outdoors, being active, it's like a super drug for us for so many different things. So for other founders listening, make sure to find some time to get outside.
I can't think of a better way to end the show. Thanks so much for being here, Richard.
Thanks, Al. I loved coming on the show.
And listen to Richard's podcast and hear from all these cool people doing cool things. We'll put all the links in the show notes and we'll chat with you again in 1 week. And on Tuesday morning, we'll be launching another episode of the Leaders, Innovators, and Big Ideas podcast. Cheers, everyone.
If you haven't already, visit rainforestab.ca and sign the Rainforest Social Contract. Become part of the inclusive, silo-busting, sector-agnostic, all-industry, open-sourced, ego-shrinking, ecosystem-building, entrepreneur-focused, wide-open, social barrier-smashing community known as Rainforest Alberta.
This episode is brought to you by New Idea Machine, a unique blend of a tech incubator and a software development powerhouse. We're not just building software. We're crafting the next generation of homegrown tech wizards. Got a project in mind or looking to hire fresh talent? Reach out and let's make tech magic happen. Visit newideamachine.com for more info.
Music for the show was created by Tony Del Deegan. Please be sure to share this episode with everyone you know. Also, don't forget to come by and say hi at the next Rainforest event. Let us know what you think of this podcast. If you're interested in being either a host, sponsor, or a guest of the show, send me an email at rainforestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.